All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Kaf Chet Amud Aleph. Just before we start, just to discuss the word Cherem or Machrim, which is going to be the main topic of today's daf and tomorrow's daf until the end of the Perek, is the word Cherem is used in the Chumash. We just read it recently in Parshat Chukat when Bnei Israel attacked the Knani, that were Vayishbi Menu Shevi. Over there it says that Bnei Israel take a neder, L'Hashem Yomarim Naton Titen Amazeb Yadiv, Echramti Et Arehem. And Rashi over there says, V'Echramti Zagdish Shtalam De Gvoa. And then it says over there, V'Yishma Hashem B'Kol Yisrael V'Yitena K'nani V'Yachrem Et Hem V'Et Arehem. That Bnei Israel were machrim them and their cities. And Rashi comments about them, V'Yachrem Et Hem B'Hachariga, by killing them, V'Et Arehem Charmei Gvoa, that they were given to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the word cherem, or the way it's used in this context, it's used in other battles that Bnei Israel wage. We see that the word cherem means to wipe out completely, to obliterate, to destroy, but l'shem shamayim. And so in that case, vayacharem would be in the sense that they killed all the members of the city, all the members of the people that had attacked them. And also the charamim that Rashi notes over there, it seems to be that they were makdish, everything to Hashem that was kodesh l'Hashem. Similar to what they do when they enter into Eretz Yisrael with regards to Yericho. That would be a form of cherem. The only thing is that we have other psukim in the Torah that seem to indicate somewhat otherwise. And we're going to see towards the end of today's daf a Mishnah that has a machloket tanaim with regards to this. But in Parshat Korach, with regards to the matnot kuna, in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yudalit, it says over there, Kol cherem b'Yisrael l'chayyeh. All cherem in Israel will be for you. Now, for you over there is a reference back to the beginning of the parshia, which is Vedaber Shem El Aharon. So, to you means to you, Aharon. That makes it sound like all the cheremim belong to the Kohanim. And in the parshia that we've been discussing throughout this Masechta, in Perek Chav Zayin, there it also discusses about cheremim in Pasuk Chav Chet, Ach Kol cherem, Asher Yachrim Ish Lashem. Kol asher lo me'adam u'behema u'misteach u'zato lo yimacher v'lo yigael kol cherem kodesh kodeshim hu la'ashem. So here it sounds like kol cherem is kodesh kodeshim hu la'ashem. Sounds like the charamim go to Hashem. And then we have kol cherem she'yachram min adam lo yipadeh mot yumat. It sounds similar to the cherem that was indicated by the battle with the Knani that was mentioned in Parshat Chukat. In addition, what we've been discussing until now by steach u'zah, at the end of the parshia of Steach Uzzah, it says, "Vaya asadeh b'tzeito b'yovel kodesh l'Hashem, k'steach cherem la'kohen tiyach uzzato." Just like a steach cherem, it goes to the kohen to be achuzah. So over here you have a problem, which is that some of the psukim indicate that cherem goes to the kohanim, and some of the psukim seem to indicate that a cherem goes to Hashem. Now you could argue that it's one and the same, and we saw something like this a couple of daf ago in the Masechta, that the Kohanim Yishulchan Gavoa Kazachu, and that really everything is Lashem, and that the Kohanim get it, Kodesh Lashem, and then it's a Kohen Tiyachuzato because they get a Yishulchan Gavoa. That's a possibility, although it would go against the thesis of the Cherem being something that is completely wiped out, or completely Asur Bahana'ah, and that there's no redeeming, and that there's no purchasing of it. So, in all likelihood, there are two forms of Charamim, which is what the Mishnah and Chazal acknowledge, that there is a cherem, what they call Hashem or the Berek Abayit. There's also a cherem lakohanim. And if you specify, then there's no problem. Because if you say it's cherem lakohanim, we know what it means. It means that it's going to be dedicated to the kohanim. It means that you have relinquished all control. You've relinquished all ownership over this item. And now it's going to be dedicated to the service of the Kohanim, to the Kohanim themselves, and you have no way to retract that or take it back, because the Pasuk says, and Tosafot, in the first Tosafot here on the Amud, points out that this is clearly a reference to the Charamim of Kohanim. It says, Lo yimacher v'lo yigael. Can't be sold, it can't be redeemed. It's out of your possession so totally that you have no way to get it back at all. Whereas, if it was a cherem legdesh, then you would monetize it, and you would give the monies to Hekdesh. Rashi says it, and the Balei Tosafot on the Amud Bet, that Hekdesh has no interest in being a landowner. Hekdesh has no interest in owning assets. Hekdesh needs an operating budget, and they need monies to do whatever it is in the upkeep of the Mikdash. And therefore, it has to be that if you're Makdish something or give a cherem Lashem, that cherem must be monetizable. But that means that it could be bought, it could be redeemed. and that there is some sort of residual ownership, or in essence, the way that the Balei Tosafot frame it is that when it comes to a cherem lebedek abayit, a cherem lebedek abayit is the equivalent of hekdesh, in a sense, the equivalent of being magdish, the bedek abayit. The question really comes up with regards to when a person says cherem stam. He does not indicate whether it's a cherem l'shem or a cherem l'kohen. What happens in that instance? And that's the machloket tanaim we'll see at the end of today's daf. But that's just to give you a background as to what we're speaking about over here. And that's why Tosafot, we'll see in a second, asks a question about our Mishnah, which is machrim adam mitzuno umibekaro. Person can create a cherem out of his tzon or his bakar. And again here, cherem indicates a much stronger form of whatever you're trying to do. Even if you're talking about, the Gemara uses the term cherem for a form of nidoy. It's a very strong form of nidoy, is called cherem. And we also have the word cherem used, as we saw in the psukim, in terms of being totally dedicated to Hashem, or even by human beings, that they have to be killed because they are cherem l'Hashem. So we find it's a very strong, forceful way of dedicating something. So machrim adam mitzonomi bikaro umi avadavu mishifchotav haknanim. And he can do that for his avadim and shifchot haknanim umisteh achuzato, or from his property that is an achuza. This is in contrast, we'll see in the next Mishnah, to other items where he can't do this. And we'll explain that once we get to the next Mishnah as to why these items are picked. Ve'mechrim et kulam eina muhramim. But if he does this to all of them, then it doesn't work. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So what he's saying here, if you looked at that, there was a mem in front of every word that was mentioned here in terms of the object of his haramim, which is that it means from amongst. That means that from amongst his bakar, from amongst his tzon, from amongst his avadim, from amongst his shvachot, from amongst his steachuza, he can be machrim. What he can't do is be machrim all of them. And that we'll see in the Gemara as to why that is, based on the psukim. But the Mishnah does indicate that this is Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, which somewhat hints to the fact that there must be somebody who argues on him, because otherwise it just should have began the Mishnah Rabbi Eliezer Omer. The fact that it says Divrei Rabbi Eliezer gives you an expectation that there's someone who is choleik on him. The Gemara will claim that the next statement of the Mishnah is choleik on Rabbi Eliezer. It's not the pashtut of the reading of the Mishnah. The pashtut of the reading of the Mishnah is that the next part of the Mishnah is simply a pol yotze. It's a derivative of the first part of the Mishnah, but it's not arguing. In the Tosefta, you do find that there's a position of the Chachamim that disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. They agree fundamentally with his position that the Torah says, don't be makdish all of your items, but if you do it, you will be successful. As opposed to Rabbi Eliezer says, if you do it, you're unsuccessful. Chachamim say you are successful, and that more likely would be the reason that there's someone who argues you're on Rabbi Eliezer, rather than the following, which is Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Ma'im legvoa, ein adam rashai l'achrim kol nechasav. When it comes to giving things to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then a person doesn't have the right to be machrim all of his possessions. Achad kama v'kama, she'adam chas on nechasav. That certainly a person should be then careful with his expenditures, careful with what he does with his possessions, that a person shouldn't be squandering all of his assets or his money. He should be very careful with them. If there's a limitation with regards to doing this, even when it comes to dedicating it to Hashem, then certainly when it comes to giving it to other parties or just spending it, then a person should not be so free to waste away their assets. So again, it could easily be read, this latter part of the Mishnah, as a moral lesson that is learned from the halacha in the first half of the Mishnah, and not saying that the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah argues, although the Gemara will indicate such. Tosafot's question over here is, Bim Tema, this pasuk is written by Cherem Anitan LeKohanim, which is the proof text that we're going to bring over here for the Mishnah, and the Loch of the Mishnah is written by Cherem Kohanim. And yet the Mishnah calls them that they are Legvoah, that they're dedicated to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which makes it sound like that is Cherem of Perek Abayit or Cherem LaHashem. And that's why he says, Heche Kamar B'matnitan Mayim Legvoah. When Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, if that's true by Gavoah, by Hekdesh, and it's certainly true by a joke. It says, V'alav l'gvohu, kim l'kohanim. This is not going to Hashem. It's going to the Kohanim. Tosafot does not directly answer the question, but he does, based on another Gemara note, that he thinks that you have to say here, that Charmei Kohanim are also have Kedushata Guf in them. Until they reach the Kohanim, where then they revert back to being Chulin, until that point in time, there's a very strong force of Kedusha associated with those Charamim. So strong that it's lo yimacher v'lo yigael. You can't redeem them. You can't sell them. You can't monetize them. And they have the ability to be mafkia midei shibud because they have kedushat aguf on them. So it's a very strong form of kedusha. And Tosafot does not directly answer why then it's called the gavoa, but maybe because it's kedushat aguf, maybe that's such a strong form of kedusha that even though in the end it's going to the kohanim, it is the equivalent of hekdesh legavoa. Or we have to go back to what we mentioned earlier, that it's mishulchan gavoa kazochi. That even if it is belonging to the kohen or going to the kohanim, it's only because it's being given to them from the shulchan gavoa. And that's another way to deal with it. But Tosafot just makes that note that the difference between charamim makes it that this seemingly is speaking about charmei kohanim, yet it calls it gavoa, which seems to be a conflation of the two charamim. Now the Gemara asks, minahan emile, how do we know that this is a case? Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. So the pasuk that they're quoting from again is pasuk chavchet and perchav zayin, ach kol cherim asher yacharim ish lashem. And now the important word or letter in each word here is mi kol, emphasis on the mi, kol asher lo, me adam ubeima, umisteach uzato. So the mem is a preface to all of the words that are mentioned here. Mikol, me'adam, misteach uzato. So mem, that mem is indicative of from amongst. And that's what the Gemara says over here, based on the Braita. Kol asher lo, below kol asher lo. It says mikol, and not kol. It says from amongst, not all of what he has. Me'adam, below kol adam. From adam and not kol adam. We have in the Braita here, it says, mi be'ema, v'lo kol be'ema. That does not feature in the pasuk. The way the pasuk reads is, me adam ube'ema. So you could say it's implicit, because it says, me adam ube'ema. The vav chibur makes it that it's as if it said, me adam umi be'ema. So then you could explain it that way, but the pashtur of the pasuk is that there's no mi be'ema in the pasuk. So that's why some take it out of the Braita over here, as you can see in the Masorah Shas. Misteach uza. Below kol steach uza, from amongst his property that he has inherited, it's really misteach uzato in the pasuk, and not kol steach uza, and not all of his inherited property. Yachol yachrim, you would think that the pasuk's telling you that you may not do such. Fim yachrim yei muhramim, but if you do it, you will be successful. Tamalomar ach, the pasuk begins ach kol cherim, and ach, as Rashi notes, is a lashon of miut, lashon of exclusion. And that tells you that to the exclusion of your ability to do such, meaning that you cannot create a cherem unless you abide by the rules of the pasuk, which means that it's me from amongst. It can't be the totality of your assets. It has to be from amongst your assets. Otherwise, the cherem won't work. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer was obviously the Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah that says that you cannot successfully be machrim these items unless you're doing it from amongst the assets, not from the totality of the assets. Hamar of Elazar Bezaya, Ma im ligvoa ein adam rashay lachrim kol nechasav alachat kama v'kama she adam chas on nechasav. Same quote that we have from Elazar ben Azariah in our Mishnah is mentioned at the end of the Braita. Mitzricha, and now the Gemara says, how come the pasuk has to list so many items where it says mi? It says mi kol asher lo me adam, and the Gemara here is going to suggest also mi beima umisteach uzato. Four different items that it mentions with the preface of me, why do I need all of them? Mi kol asher lo, the reason I need it there is havamino kol di'itlei lo lachrim. That mi kol asher lo sounds like from everything that he owns. So from everything he owns, he can't do it. Aval min echad, if it's one specific type of asset, maybe there he could be lecham ekule. He could dedicate it entirely. Kadav rachmana me'adam velo kol adam. That's why it writes me'adam and not all human beings, tell you that you can't just, even within a single asset class, you can't dedicate that or be machrim that. So here, obviously, we're speaking of Adam is a Eved Knani, Shivcha Knani. V'ikatav Rachmana, Me'adam, Delo Sagile, Belo Abuda. So, Me'adam, you need those workers to help you out. And since it's impossible without any workers, Torah says or insists that you keep yourself some workers. Aval Sadeh, Sagile, B'distorin. Who says you need to own a field in order to be successful or provide a livelihood? You could be someone who is a sharecropper. You could be somebody who works for another party and earns their living that way. So maybe over there, I would have thought that by a sadeh, it would be enough that you have me adam and that you have mi kol asher lo. But if you got to Meisteh Achuzato, maybe Steh Achuzato, you can give away everything. That's why we say Meisteh Achuzato, which tells you that even Meisteh Achuzato, you can't give away everything. So if you told me about these two items, Mishum Dahacha Chiyuta, Vahacha Chiyuta, that's because these are the basic providing assets that the individual needs. His workers and his fields are what provide his livelihood to him. Ava metaltalim lichraminu. But when it comes to metaltalim lichraminu kulu, you should be able to be sanctified or be machrim, all of them. And the answer to that is mikol asher. That's the mikol at the beginning is reference to metaltalim, not just all of his possessions, but specifically his non-real assets, because those are covered already by Misteach Uzato. So Mikol tells you that even Metaltalim, you can't give away everything. Therefore, it's Riche. Therefore, we need all of them in order to teach you that in all of these instances, you cannot give away everything. You can only give away a portion of the assets. Now, the Shita Mikupetzet points out here, based on the Rosh, that there seemingly is a stira between what the Mishnah says and what is brought here as the reasoning for the position of the Mishnah, which is over here. It says that the words mi kol, me adam, miste achuzato are what teach you that you can't give away all your assets. In the Mishnah, it seems to indicate that every class of asset, you can't give away everything. Mi tzono, mi bikaro, me avadav, umi shif chotav. Sounds like from that each one of those classes, tzon alone, bakar alone, avadim alone, shvachot alone, none of them can you give away that entire asset class. You'd have to keep something from that asset class. That's the meat. But if you look at the psukim say me'adam. Me'adam groups all adam into a single category. That means eved and shivcha should be a single category. And similarly with bakar and tzon, it says mi behema, or it's implied mi behema. Behema is all one category. And therefore the Rosh comes to the conclusion, the Shita Mikubetz, it brings this, mashma, im nishalo miksat adam, Omiksad Beima Avicherim Bitzarich Lomar Dimitsino Umi Bakaro Akolechat. Based on this you have to say Tzon and Bakar are all one asset class. Bechein Mavadav and Mishiv Chotav, it's also all one asset class. He says as opposed to what is seemingly implied by the Mishnah that they're separate asset classes, it's not true. Mitsuno Bikaro is one asset class. Avadav and Shiv Chotav is one asset class. Therefore if you leave over even Evid or Shivcha, you're fine. But the way the Mishnah reads simply, it would have been you have to leave over an Eved and a Shivcha in order to be okay. But it, based on the way that we're bringing the Limud, it combines Eved and Shivcha, combines Tzon and Bakar. And based on that, you would only have to leave one of either of those two in order for it to qualify for what the Pasuk says of not giving away everything. Now the Gemara wants to know with regards to Behema, why Behema Lomali? Why do I need me Behema? Again, the word mi behema does not appear. It's probably implicit because it says me adam u behema. So lamalei dekatanya yocho yachrim adam beno bito avdo b'shivchato ha'ivrim. You would think a person has the right to be machrim his children or an eved and shivcha ivrim who work for him. In all of these cases, the individual has no real property ownership in these people. His children, obviously, he doesn't have ownership of his children. And Avdov Shivchato Ivrim, as opposed to an Eved Kanani and a Shivcha Kanani, we have property ownership, full ownership in them, balut over them. Eved and Shivcha Ivrim, you have a right for them as long-term laborers for their output, for their work, but you don't own them, and they're not property to you. Ustei Miknato, as well as a case where it's a field that is purchased until the Yovel versus a Stei Achuza, which is your field permanently. So how do I know that those items that are mentioned here and are going to be mentioned in our next Mishnah, you do not have a right to be machrim. Tamalomar behema. That's what the Torah says, behema. Ma behema yeshul v'shut mochra. Just like by behema, you have a right to sell it because it's under your ownership, your balut. You can do what you will please with it. Avka yeshul yeshul v'shut mochra. So two items that we have complete control and ownership over them, that is subject to chayrim. Falo bitok tana yeshul v'shut mochra. Wait a minute. When it comes to his daughter, he does have a right to sell her. He can sell her off as an ama ha'ivriya. So yocho yachrimenu. So maybe yachrimena. So maybe she should also be subject to cherem. Tamalomer beima. Ma beima yeshul v'shut mochra leolam. Just like a beima, you can sell it and you can do with it as you please, anytime you want, at any point in its lifetime, at any point that's under your jurisdiction. So too, you're going to be machrim something where throughout its entire life cycle, throughout its entire time that you have auspices over it, you can be machrim it, which is not true by Bito, because by Bito, it's only when she's a ktana that he has the right to sell her off as an ama ivriya. But she's an arav, she's a bogeret, he doesn't have a right to do such, and therefore, she's not subject to charamim. Now, in these cases, all of them, you would have a havamina that maybe you should have a right to be machrim them, and we reject that right, which is, you might have the right to be machrim your daughter because you could sell her as an ama ivriya. We dispel that and say that's not the case. By the case of Eved and Shifcha, you would think maybe your Eved Ivri or Shifcha Ivrim are similar to those like a Knanit. Comes to dispel that and say you don't have enough ownership in them to be machrim them. And similarly with the Estei Mikna versus Estei Achuza. The one question you have is Beno. By his son, why would you think that he has rights to sell off his son? He has no ownership rights in his son. And therefore, the Shita Mikubetz it brings in Otvav, that Nira Beno Nakat Agav Bito. The fact that it mentions Beno over here is just Agav, that it mentions Bito. It's not because Beno you would have any Havamina to say such. And that is the view of the Rosh. On the other hand, the Re makes a suggestion, it's brought here in the Shita Mikubetz, that the Havamina Mishum Shezuche B'Mitziuto Midrabanan, since the father gains rights to the mitziah of the katan, midrabanan, yachol achrimo, then you have a right to be machrimim. It seems to me to be a very difficult logic over here. Just because the rabbanan empowered you to take the mitziah of a katan, that's only because of mishum eva, or because of ktata. We don't want fights, we don't want issues to break out. It's not really because you own it, not really because you own him. And so then why would you extrapolate that into ownership or the possibility of ownership to be machrim, the individual? So it seems to me to be a very precarious assumption. And therefore it's more likely that the Rosh is right here, that Beno is just brought down Agav, but it's no Havamina to think that you would have the right to be machrim your child since you don't have any ownership rights in that child. All right. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Im Legvoa Ein Adam Rashai. Hainu Tanakamo. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is no different than Rabbi Eliezer the Tanakamo. It doesn't seem like from the Mishnah, again, as I noted before, that he is really arguing on him. He's just extrapolating the din. Nevertheless, the Gemara here thinks that he must be arguing because it says, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So, Igi Benayu de Rabbi Yilah. The nafkamina between their positions is Rabbi Yilah. Damar Rabbi Yilah, Be'usha Itkinu. In Usha, they established Hamivazvez, Ayivazvez Yoter Michomesh. The person that expends money should not expend more than 1/5 of his assets. As Rashi points out over here, the Gemara in other places, the Gamrina mi Yaakov Avinu. We learn this out from Yaakov Avinu, who says, Aser Asren Ulach, that I'm going to give you an Aser Aser, so double a Saron, which is 1/5. And therefore, we, based on that, say that there is a 20% cap on a person's expenditures for a mitzvah aseh, for any mitzvah, for any obligation that they have, whether it's tzedakah or any other mitzvah. There's a cap that you may not spend more than 1/5 of your assets. And the idea being that we don't want you causing yourself to go into poverty or where you're going to have to eat starich libriot. So we made sure or established that there is a cap on the expenditures or the mitzvah. I think it is milagav. It sounds like it's 20%, but if it's milabar, it's 25%. But I think it is 20% because it's based on aser asren ulach. Even though generally in Chazal, Chomesh would reference to a Chomesh Milabar, the fact that it uses Aser Asren Ulach, that's 1/10 to 1/10, but over here it sounds a little bit like it's 20%. Then the Gemara says, Maseh Be'achat Shebikesh Levazvez Yoter Mechomesh. Someone wanted to expend or give away in Tzedakah more than 20%. V'lo Yinicho Lo Chaveirav. And his friends, his compatriots did not let him do it. Umanu. And who was that? Rabbi Yeshevav. So that was the person. Some say it this way, Rabbi Yeshevav was the one who wanted to distribute his assets, and his friends or his compatriots didn't let him expend it, Umanu, and who was his peer that didn't do that, didn't allow him to do that, was Rabbi Akiva, who did not allow Rabbi Yeshevav to do such a thing, to expend more than 20%. Now, this Chomesh, which is the cap or limit at which you can give towards a mitzvah aseh or towards tzedakah, how hard a cap it is a machloket as to whether it's just a suggested cap, which means that up until that point, it's a mitzvah. Beyond that point, it's not a mitzvah. But if you do it, it's a midat chasidut, or is it a hard cap, which means that once you reach 20%, you're locked, and if you give more than that, you're actually violating this cap, and you're not allowed to give more than that. It's not even a midat chasidut. It's incorrect. It's improper. The truth is that you probably could differentiate between the asset capacity of the individual, which is depending on how high the net worth of an individual is, then when they give away 20%, it may not be impactful. In that case, you might say that there's a reason to believe there's a midat chasidut. He gives away more than that, even though there's no mitzvah. On the other hand, if the person has limited assets or limited net worth, if they give away 20% and then they continue to give away more, maybe in that sense we would say that it's not viewed as a midat chasidut, or we would say that we don't condone that. We don't even view it as a midat chasidut because that person's going to end up being nitzarech lebriot. He's going to put himself in a position where he's going to then need distributions himself, and we don't want that to happen. So it could be possibly that that distinction in how you view the cap over here might have to do with the net worth of the individual. Right now, the Mishnah, as we mentioned before, gives you the opposite series of individuals, which we saw in the Bright already, where Cherem doesn't work. Machrim b'no bito, vavdo v'shivchato ivrim, son, his daughter, his avadim, and shvachot that are ivrim, that are Jewish, ustemik nato, or a field that he purchased, which he has the rights or leasehold in it until the yovel, ain muhramim. That you can't be machrim. Shein adam machrim davar sheinu shelo. Person can't be machrim something that he doesn't own. So again, by the stay mikna, you don't own the field. You own the leasehold. You own the production until the ovel, but you don't own it. Since you don't own it, you can't be machrim it. And the same is true with his eved ivri, his shifchak ivriya, or zamai ivriya, and with regards to his beno ubito, even when they are ktanim, he doesn't have a right of ownership or full ownership over them, and therefore you don't have a right to be machrim. So this is clearly in distinction to Hekdesh. Because when it comes to Hekdesh, we already saw that you can be makdish estei mikna. You can be makdish estei mikna because you can makdish whatever you own. You own the rights of the leasehold until the ovel. You can be makdish it until the ovel. And then the gizbar, the treasurer, can sell it out until the ovel. When the ovel comes, it reverts back to its original owner. But that's because you were makdish, exactly what you own. Cherem is an absolute type of hekdesh, which prevents anybody from having hana from it. And that's true also by nidarim. If you use the lashon of cherem by nidarim, it has a much stronger connotation than just a neder. It means an absolute isur hana to anybody. Anybody and everybody. And so that doesn't work over here, because by estei mikna, you can't generate that type of cherem because you don't have the type of complete ownership that would grant you such a right to make it a sur to everybody because it's not yours. In the end, in the yovel, it's going to go back to the owner, and therefore it can't be subject to cherem because this type of cherem is much stronger and only works when you have complete ownership over the control and ownership over the item. So that for that reason, none of these items can be mukhram, even though all of these items can be mukdash, which is you can makdish, the output or whatever benefit derives from these individuals, or the field, you can be makdish, the berek abayit. Hakohanim valivim ein machrimim. They cannot be machrim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon omer, hakohanim ein machrimim, shacharamim shalahem. The kohanim can't be machrim because the macharimim belong to them. Valivim machrimim, shein acharamim shalahem. The other hand, levim can be machrim because the charamim don't go to them. So it's clear here that the reference is to charmei kohanim, where they assume here that the cherem of the kohen is going, the cherem is going to the kohen, and therefore if he's a kohen, he doesn't have to disgorge his charamim because they would go to him. He's a kohen. So given that, then there's no point or purpose or meaning to charmei kohanim because it's just theirs anyway. Whereas by levim, you could see a possible distinction, and that's really the machlokes here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, where Rabbi Yehuda says levim also can't be machrim, and the Gemara will explain why. Shimon omer that it's true of the kohanim, because by the kohanim, it's the kohen disgorges it can come back to him. But the levim can be machrimim, because the charamim don't go to them. Amar Rabbi, nirim divrei Rabbi Yehuda bikarkaot. Rabbi Yehuda's position makes sense when you're talking about real property, real assets. Property, because by karkaot, shnemar, achuzat olom hi lahem. It says with regards to the property of the kohanim and the levim, that it's an achuzat olam hi lahem. It's a permanent ownership to them. The arei levim, the arei kohanim, the land that's given to them is something that permanently remains theirs. B'divrei Rabbi Shimon b'metaltlin. By metaltlin, it makes more sense to hold like Rabbi Shimon, she'en acharamim shalem, because over there there is no cherem that belongs to the Levi. Now Gemara explains. Rabbi Yehuda, Bishlama Kohanim ein machrimim shacharimim shalahem. I understand why Kohanim can't be machrim, because the charim belong to them. Leviim, when it comes to Leviim, I don't understand his position. Rabbi Shimon has a good claim, which is that Leviim don't keep their own charim. So it's where it says, Bishlama mikarke lo machrime. Makes sense that Leviim can't be machrim their land. Dichtiv ke achuzat olam hi lahem. Because there, that pasuk, which is speaking more generically about that which is given to the Kohanim Leviim to Shevet Levi, that's an achuzat ilahem. That's a permanent achuzah, something that can't be taken away from them, can't be distributed to others, and therefore it makes sense to say that those charamim, the Levi can't execute on. And given that that is the source, this would only be true of fields that are the Leviim or Kohanim's fields, meiste achuzah, not something they inherited through their mother, or not something they got through a ste achuzah being mugdash and then being distributed to the Kohanim. Because it's specific to the fields and the Arei Leviim and Arei Kohanim, where we say that they have a Achuzat Olam on it. But when it comes to the Metaltalei, Lecharme, why can't they have the ability to be machrin them? So Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Mi Kol Asher Lo, Umi Ste Achuzato. The Pasuk, which we read numerous times, Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Chet, that there it says, Mi Kol Asher Lo, and Mi Ste Achuzato. Mekish Metaltalim Le Karkot. There's a hekesh between metatlim and karkot. Just like karkot, the Leviim and the Kohanim are precluded or excluded from the din of charamim, so too, with regards to metatlim, the same din will apply to them. That is the view of Rabbi Yehuda, the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Shimon, bishlama Kohanim kidamran. I understand why Kohanim are excluded because of what we said. Kohanim are out because of the karka issue, and they're also out because of achuzat ol yilolahem, and metatlim because they come back to them anyway. Hello, Leviim, with Leviim, Mishpalam, Bishlama, Metaltalim, Lachrim. Understand why by Metaltalim they can be Machrim them, Delo Mekish. He doesn't hold of the Hekesh between the Karkaot and the Metaltalim. Hello, Mekarke, Amai. Why is a Levi able to be Machrim his property? Aktiv, Akuzati Olam Hilahem. Don't we have the Pasuk that it's an Akuzat Olam, and that's a reference both to Leviim and Kohanim? My Machrimim, Nami de Kamar. Rabbi Shimon, he says Machrimim means Metaltalim. When he says Leviim can be machrim, he doesn't mean everything. He means just the metaltalim. The karkaot, he agrees, they can't be machrim. But he says, that doesn't make so much sense. V'amikdani seifa, amar rabbi nirim divrei Rabbi Yehuda b'mekarkei, divrei Rabbi Shimon b'metaltalei. When he says that the position of Rabbi Yehuda makes sense in karkaot, and the position of Rabbi Shimon makes sense b'metaltalim, that indicates that Rabbi Yehuda argues by karkaot and metaltalim. And Rabbi Shimon argues by karka to metaltalim, and he's pointing out that he likes Rabbi Yehuda by karka, and Rabbi Shimon by metaltalim. Michlal to Rabbi Shimon, mikarkei nami kamar. The fact that he has to say, he only agrees with Rabbi Shimon only by metaltalim, and only Rabbi Yehuda by mikarkei, makes it sound like Rabbi Shimon argues by mikarkei as well. From there, it sounds like Rabbi Shimon argues even on the point of mikarkei as well. So he says, achi kamar, amar Rabbi, this is the solution that we've used before with regards to things like this, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda, live Rabbi Shimon b'karkaot. Rabbi Yehuda's position is viewed favorably Rabbi Shimon by karkaot. Shav Rabbi Shimon lo nechlak elav el b'metaltalim. Rabbi Shimon only argues with regards to metaltalim. Aval b'karkaot modile. But when it comes to karkaot, he doesn't disagree. The only difficulty with reading the Mishnah that way is that only half of Rabbi's statement works that way. The Gemara in other places, when it does this, makes it work in both directions. It says that Tivrei Rabbi Yehuda are nearing the Rabbi Shimon, and the Divrei Rabbi Shimon are nearing the Rabbi Yehuda. That's not the case here. Here it's only in one of the two cases do we say that. It says here that when Amar Rabbi nearing Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Le Rabbi Shimon bekarkot, Shnemar ki achuzat olam hilahem, the Divrei Rabbi Shimon, not to Rabbi Yehuda, but Divrei Rabbi Shimon alone, b'metaltalin shenacharamim shalahem. So it's a difficult way to read the Mishnah, but that's the way the Gemara does it in order to explain this position of Rabbi Shimon, because doesn't seem to be any reason why by karkot of the Leviim, that Rabbi Shimon would believe that they could be machrim them, given the fact that Leviim are subject to the pasuk of achuzat olam hilahem, and so therefore they shouldn't have the capacity to be machrim it. Right now, we have a couple of statements of Rav Chiya bar Avin. They're spread out, and in between we're going to bring brightot that speak about this issue. The first of which is, I'm Rav Chiya bar Avin, echrim metaltalim, notan lechol kohen shiyirtzeh. If a person is machrim his metaltalim, he gives them to whichever kohen he wants to give it to. Shenemar, Because the pasuk says in Korach, which is the pasuk that we read before, Kocherim Yisrael, Lichayeh, all Cherim in Yisrael will belong to you. And over here, but it means to Aaron. Aaron is representative of all the Kohanim. And that means that you can give it to whichever Kohen you want. There's no guidance or demand that you give it to a particular Kohen. It is your choice. And to whichever Kohen you choose, you have the right to give it to. Now, Tosafot over here says, Ein ze ikara drush. This is not the main drusha from which is learned. Because he says, we're going to learn from this pasuk later on, tomorrow's daf, that we learn from this, that once the charamim are given to the Kohanim, they're chulin the gamre. And therefore, this pasuk's not available for this. He says, rather, it's misvorohu. It's a logical reason. Kamo truma, shnot na the whole Kohen. Just like truma goes to any Kohen you choose, so too, cherim should go to any Kohen that you choose. There's no reason to believe that it should be otherwise. The only thing is, you don't have to give it to the Kohanim of the particular mishmar at that time. Just like by truma, you don't have to. So too, by cherim, you don't have to. And that's also the reason why the Gemara is going to ask later on, why aren't you making mitaltelim the karkaot? That question's only relevant if you say it's a logical argument. If you say it's gzeret hakatuv, then the Gemara can't ask that question as to why there wasn't a hekesh to undermine this view or this position of Rabbi Chir Bavin. But from Chir Bavin, it says zechri mitaltelim on the kosh kohen shiyotzei. You can give it to whichever kohen you want, just like truma. Although obviously you could see a difference between them. By truma are kodshei gvulin, and those are things that don't have that high level of kedusha. Versus Cherim, which is Kodesh Lashem, there you could argue that maybe there's more reason to believe that it should be distributed in a more equitable manner to all those that are in service of Hashem at that time, rather than to a particular Kohen. But we don't say that. Maybe that's what the Pasuk is brought to show, which is maybe it's not the primary source, as Tosafot says, but it's indicative of the fact that you can give it to whichever Kohen you choose. Echrim Sedotav, if you're Machrim, you're Stei Achuza, Notnan Kohen Shibota Mishmar. Then it goes out to the Kohanim of that particular Mishmar. Now, we're going to speak about this in 1 second in the Psukim, but this leads to a major question by the Balei HaTosafot. If that's the case, if a Kohen is Machrim is Sadeh, and it's not his own Mishmar, then he doesn't get the field back. And if that's the case, then what happens in our Mishnah? The Braita that we brought before, explaining our Mishnah, says that with regards to the Kohanim, the reason that they can be machrim is because the reason they can't be machrim is because it would go back to them anyway. That's not true. It won't go back to them. It only goes back to a kohen sheba oto mishmar. It has to be in service, the mishmar that's in service at that time. If it's not his mishmar, it's not going back to him. So Tosfot, because of that, says mitzarech lamar to the rav tcha the milta mar hachi, that the Gemara before, which quoted this and said the reason the kohanim aren't machrim is because they just get it back anyway. That's just a bonus. But really, the reason that the Kohanim can't be machrim sadeh is because achuzat olam hi lahem. Same way that is by the Levim, that's the real reason for the Kohanim. Even though it's written by the Levim, Kohanim are also a subset of Shevet Levi. Since it's written by the Levim, it also applies to the Kohanim. So Tosafot says that's the primary reason why Kohanim can't be machrim their karka, is because of this problem of achuzat olam, and not the fact that they get it back, because it's not always true that they're going to get it back, and in all likelihood they won't get it back, because it only happens when those once every 24 weeks, when their mishmar is in service in the mikdash, that they would have a right to get it back. Now, that does indicate from Tosafot that he takes the statement of Rav Chir Bavin very literally, which is, Hechrim sadutav notim lekoen shebaoto mishmar. You can give it to whichever coin you want from that mishmar. That means that it does not get distributed to all the members of the Mishmar, but rather it gets distributed to one Kohen that you pick from that Mishmar. Tosafot takes that very literally, based on the question he's asking on the Mishnah and his solution to that problem. Whereas there are others who say that that's not the case. And Notan the Kohen, Shabbatot Mishmar, just means generally, it goes to the Kohanim of that Mishmar, similar to the proof text that we're going to bring for this, which is Shenamar. The reason that's the case is, because at the end of the parshia of Steachuza, it says there, "Vayas Sadeh b'Tzeitobi Yovel Kodesh Lashem, k'Steach Cherem l'Kohen Tiachuzato." K'Steach Cherem means that it has a din like Sadeh of Cherem, and a Sadeh of Cherem is l'Kohen Tiachuzato. That goes to the Kohen, and Gamar l'Kohen mi Kohen Gezel Ager. And that Kohen that we mentioned there, we're going to learn from Gezel Ager, Bahata Minalan. By Gezel Ager, how do you know there that it goes out to the Mishmar Kohanim? Detanya, because it says in Parshat Naso with regards to Gezel Ager, Gezel Ager is a subset of the Parshia of Hashem Gzelot. Sham Gzelot is a case where someone who owes money to another party under oath denies the fact that they owe the money, and then later on admits to the fact that they were lying under oath. In that case, they have to bring an Asham Gzelot, and in addition to that, they have to pay back the principal amount that they stole or that they were withholding, plus a Chomesh, plus an additional 25% on top of that, and that is paid out to the victim who they were denying that they owed the money to, or for whom they stole the money. What happens if there's a victim who has no relatives? As the Gemara says, Chazal tells us, there's no victim that doesn't have a relative. Everybody in Israel has relatives. Just depends how far away those relatives are, but you have a relative. Who's the only person that doesn't have any relatives at all? That is a ger who converted, and after he had converted, he had no children. And so then he is someone who has no relatives whatsoever but Klal Yisrael. So the ger dies in such a situation in which the individual owed money to this party and then took a shvu'ah, denying it, and then afterwards admits that he was lying under oath, and now has to bring in a sham gzelot, and he has to make repayment to the ger. The problem is, the ger is not there. With any other person, if the person's not there, you give it to the yorshim, and it's the equivalent of giving to them. But the ger, there's nobody else there. So the Torah tells us in Parshat Noso that when it comes to this problem, it says, v'im ein la'ish goel, if the person has no relatives, la'shiva sham elav, to give back here, the word Hashem is not the Hashem Gzelot. Hashem means the principal amount. Hashem HaMushav LaHashem HaKoheniyeh. That the Hashem, the principal amount, HaMushav, that's also given back to Chomesh, that's given back to Hashem, it's given to Hashem LaKohen. Milvad El HaKippurim Asher Yichaper Bo'alav. Besides the fact that he has to bring the El HaKippurim, the Ayol, that is the Kapara, which is the Hashem Gzelot that he has to bring. And that's what the Gemara says here. The Tanya LaHashem LaKohen. Kano Hashem, but not know the Kohen. It belongs to Hashem and is distributed to the Kohenim. Mishulchan Gavoa Kazachu. Shibato Mishmar, Ata Omer the Kohen, Shibato Mishmar. Kohen a little Chol Kohen Shirte. How do you know when you have to give it to the Kohen? Okay, the Kohen is the representative of Hashem. Shulchan Gavoa Kazachu. Who says it has to go to the Kohenim of that Mishmar or Kohen from that Mishmar? Maybe it should go to any Kohen that he chooses. Shomer Milvad Ela Kippurim, Asher Yichaper Boalav. When it says the end of the pasuk, that's aside from or above and beyond the El Hashem that he has to bring. Vahare Kohen Shiboto Mishmar Akatuv Midaber. It's very clear that he's speaking about Kohanim from that Mishmar, because when you bring those korbanot to the Mikdash, they can only be serviced by the Kohanim of that Mishmar. And so, just like the El Kippurim or the Hashem Gzelot will be brought by the Kohen of that Mishmar, so too the distribution of Gezel Ager is only to the Kohanim of that Mishmar or Kohen of that Mishmar. And therefore, so too over here, by Steach Cherem, it also is only distributed to the Kohen of that Mishmar. And we also learned that out from Steach Uzah. And we know from Steach Uzah, we learned this just before, that by Steach Uzah, that the goes out to the Kohanim of that Mishmar when it bumps into the Yovel. So the Yovel, when the Kohanim of that Mishmar, they match up with the Yovel, they're going to get it. And over there, by Steach Uzah, it's clearly all the Kohanim of the Mishmar. So too by Gezel Ager, it's clear from the Gemara and other places in Baba Kamo that it goes out to all the Kohanim of the Mishmar. So now you have both Steach Uzah and Steach Cherem, which are the source for this, and the Gezer Shova. So it's seen, and the Gezel Ager, by the Steach Uzah and Gezel Ager, which are the sources for Steach Cherem, it says over there it goes out to all the Kohanim of the Mishmar. So too, over here, you would think that possibly Chechrim Stadutav should go out to all the Kohanim of the Mishmar. So, the question here, again, Balei Tosfot believe that we take it very literally. It just has to go out to any Kohen from that Mishmar with regards to the Steach Cherem. Others believe, like the Limud that we just brought over here, that it is has to go out to all the Kohanim equally or equitably from that Mishmar and not to one particular Kohen. Now, back to Rav Chir Bavin. We just brought a Braita. Now we're back to Rav Chir Bavin. He told us two dinim so far. One was if your Machrim Metaltulim can be given to any Kohen to whom you choose. And then when it says when you machrim real property sadeh, then it goes out to the kohanim of the mishmar. Now we have a third statement. Sadeh yotza lekohanim biyovel, notna the mishmar shepaga bo yovel. A sadeh that is released to the kohanim on the yovel goes to the mishmar who was the mishmar on that yovel. That's what we've been discussing all along with regards to a steach uzah. and the Steach Huzah, which is either redeemed by a third party or not redeemed at all, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, when then it goes in the Yovel and is removed from the ownership of the original owner and then given to Hashem to give to the Kohanim, it goes out to the Kohanim who are serving in the Mishmar of the Yovel of that year. Yivailu, Pagabo b'Shabbat, Mai. What happens if the Yovel falls out on Shabbat? If that's the case, Shabbat is the transition between the previous week's Mishmar and the next week's Mishmar. So who does it belong to? Does it belong to the previous week's Mishmar or the new Mishmar? He says the name of Chupana, somebody we don't see. It's us. No, now the Mishmar HaYotze. It goes to the Mishmar that is departing. Amar Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, Tanya Nami Yochi. We have a Braita that is supportive of that. Nimtza Tate Omer. Echad Yovel, Vechad Shvi'it, Mishamtim Keechad. Both Yovel and Shvi'it are able to remove any indebtedness and any obligations and do their distributions at the same moment. Ela Shovel B'tchilato, Vashmita B'sofa. The difference between them is that Yovel is in the beginning, and the Shemitah is at the end. Now, it's a very difficult term, and the Gemara is going to say that right away. Hadarabah, Mishum Hochi Havai. That's the whole reason that they fall out on the same day, is not because Ela, rather, but because. And therefore it says, Ema Mipnei Sho Yovel. To read like this. Echad Yovel V'chad Shvi'it Mishamtim Kechad Mipnei. For this reason, Shovel B'tchilato V'Hashmita B'sofa. Hashmita B'sofa. Which means that in the 49th year of the Yovel cycle, the 49th year is the Shemitah year. Yovel is then the 50th year. There is a crossover point at the end of the 49th year going into the Yovel where there is that moment where you're ending the Shemitah year and beginning the Yovel year. And what we just said here is that Shemitah Ksafim, which is one of the laws or one of the features of Shvi'it, happens at the end of the Shemitah year. So when at the close of the Shemitah year, all loans are forgiven. That's at the last moment of the Shemitah year. When it comes to the Yovel triggers the distribution of the properties, the Steach Huzah, to the Kohanim, at the beginning of the Yovel. And so then, at that moment of the transition between Shemitah to Yovel, that same exact moment, all loans are forgiven, and all Sadot Achuzah that were Nikdash, and now were not repatriated by the owners, will be distributed to the Kohanim at that moment. At that same exact moment. So that is the reason why you give it the Mishmar Yotze. Because Yovel happens at the beginning. The Yovel comes into effect and is effective at the moment Yovel enters. That's on Friday night. Right after Ben HaShemashot, when the Friday night came in, that's when the Yovel went effective. The next day already, Shabbat day, that's already past the point where the Yovel moved or did its work. And so therefore the new incoming Mishmar is not really relevant to it. It's the outgoing Mishmar that's really affected by it or in service at that time because they're in service on Friday night. And so that's why it's obvious that it goes to the Mishmar HaYotze. Now, the question you should ask me right away is, haven't we been learning in the previous Perek that the Yovel or the exchange that happens on the Yovel only happens on Yom Kippur, not on Rosh Hashanah? So how do you get it then that the Shemitah year and the Yovel year have something happen simultaneously? That's what Maya says over here. Bishlama Shvi'it b'sofa. I understand about Shvi'it at the end. Dichtiv miketz sheva shanim. Taseh Shemitah. The end of the 7 years, that's when the Shemitah happens. That's when the Shemitah Ksafim happens. Of a Yovel b'tchilato. Yovel, that goes into effect at tchilato on Rosh Hashanah. B'yom HaKippurimu. Dichtiv b'yom HaKippurim. Taviru shofar b'chol ha'etzachem. Yovel happens on Yom Kippur. It doesn't happen on Rosh Hashanah. So why would you suggest over here that they could happen simultaneously at that point in time that shifts from Shvi'it to Yovel? That's when both of these hangs happen. That's just not true. The Gemara says, Hamani, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokai. That's the view of Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokai in Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Damar Rosh Hashanah, Dechayel Yovel. He believes Yovel goes effective on Rosh Hashanah. So as opposed to the Chachamim, who we've been discussing all the way until now, they believe it happens on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokai believes that it happens on Rosh Hashanah. Now, even though he believes it happens on Rosh Hashanah, that's only with regards to the Steach Huzah, that it happens on Rosh Hashanah. As far as Avadim being freed and lands being returned to their owners, he has to agree that that happens in Yom Kippur, because it says there, Vekaratim Dror, that you will call the freedom to the land, which is connected to the Havarat HaShofar, to for the blowing of the shofar. And that only happens in Yom Kippur. So he's got to agree to that. The one case where he doesn't have to agree is with B'tzei Tobi Ovel, where it says here, by the Steachuzah, when it goes out on the Ovel. Over there, there's no tie to the din of the shofar. It's just tied to the year of the Ovel. Now, everybody agrees that Yovel starts on Rosh Hashanah. It's the Yovel year. It's the Jubilee year. Question is, when did the dinim go effective? For the Chachamim, all the dinim go effective in Yom Kippur. For Ishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, he agrees with to the items that are mentioned with regards to Karatim Drorim by the Shofar that they have in Yom Kippur, but items that are just connected to Yovel in a simple sense, but say Tobi Yovel, like the Steachuzah, those will happen on Rosh Hashanah. So this Breita that is saying that Yovel and Shvi'it can happen at that one moment at the end of the Shemitah, the beginning of Yovel, was according to Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Shama Chizkiah bar Biluto, who also is making a cameo appearance here in Shas, and he went and said over all of this to Rabbi Abou, and he says, "Belekish metaltele the karko." Says, "I don't understand. Why don't you just do a hekish between the metaltelim and the karkaot? Just like by the karkaot, you have to distribute them to the kohen, either one kohen in the mishmar or to the kohenim of that mishmar. Why don't you say about Rabbi Chir Ba'avin's position?" That should also be true by metaltelim. You said that now if you're at makish between karkaot and metaltelim, same thing that applies here by karka should also apply by metaltelim. So he says to him, wait a minute, lav tanaihi? That's the machloket tanaim and our mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Dika de makish. There's somebody who thinks there is a hekesh, that is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Dika de lo makish. And there's someone not makish, that's the view of Rabbi Shimon, who says there's no hekesh between them, and that's why he thinks that the din of a levi with regards to metaltelim is that he can't be machrim his metaltelim, because there's no hekesh between karkaot and metaltelim. Commander Amar lo makshinan. He says, Rabbi Chir Ba'avin is just saying it according to the Tana, who says there's no hekesh here. He doesn't have to hold like the one who says it's a hekesh. And so your question is not a question, because there are two opinions, and he holds like the opinion that there is no hekesh. But that does have huge halakhic implications, because the one who says there is no hekesh is Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, Rabbi Abou here is implying that Rabbi Chir Ba'avin holds like Rabbi Shimon. And when we have a machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, the loch is like Rabbi Yehuda. If that's the case, then we wouldn't paskin like Rabbi Chir Ba'avin because he holds like Rabbi Shimon. And we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, who says there is a hekesh. And then turns out that Chizkiah bar Biluto turns out to be right, not for his reasoning, but he turns out to be right that the loch is going to be that you need to make that hekesh. And that in both cases, by metaltelim and karkaot, you would have to distribute it to a kohen of that mishmar or to the kohanim of that mishmar. So it actually does have implications, the halacha. Now the Mishnah continues to discuss that which we already noted in our introduction to the daf today. Charmei Kohanim, in lem pidyon, when you make charamim to the Kohanim, there is no redeeming them. Alanot nim the Kohanim ki truma. Give it to the Kohanim like truma. That's what Tosava mentioned before. That's the svara to say it can be given to any Kohen, and that's why you may not need a pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiro omer, stam charamim leberek abayit. Stam charamim don't go to Kohanim, they go to Berek Abayit, Shneamar. Kocherim, Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaHashem. Every cherim is Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaHashem. Vachamim omrim, stam charamim le Kohanim. Stam cherim goes to Kohanim. So again, we discussed this before, that when you say it's the Kohanim, cherim goes to the Kohanim. You say cherim LaHashem, it goes to LaHashem. But if you just say cherim, what happens there? So, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira picks up on the pasuk that says, Kol cherim kodesh kodeshim hu LaHashem. The chachamim pick up the pasuk of stam cherim lekohanim shneimar k'steya cherim lekohen tiyeh ochuzato. Interesting that they quote that pasuk. The pasuk that I would have quoted is the pasuk from Parshat Korach, which says kol that all cherimim go to the kohanim. So why doesn't the Mishnah, or why don't the chachamim quote that pasuk as supporting their position when it's a much stronger support for their view when the pasuk says kol cherim b'Yisrael lechayyeh. If you look at the Shita Mekubetz at Od Aleph, he says, "V'hai d'lo mighty kra d'chol cherem b'Yisrael, b'shum d'au muki m'metaltelin." Either you have to say that pasuk's talking about metaltelin, not karko. Oh, the midrash harein kechulin kishenat na the kohen, or like the drush we're going to use it for in tomorrow's daf. Again, Tosafot mentioned this earlier. Also, why the pasuk's not available for the drusha that the Gemara brought at the beginning for Rabbi Chir Ba'avin is because it's used for a different drusha. To tell you that once it comes to the hands of the Kohen, it turns into Chulin. So since that pasuk wasn't available, the Chachamim had to go to a different pasuk of Stei Acherim, the Kohen Tiyah Achuzato. Im Kein, Lama Nermar, Kocherim, Kodesh Kodeshim, Hu LaHashem. So then if that's the case, according to the Chachamim, that Stam Charamim go to the Kohanim, Why does it say kastei cherem? Why does it say that kol cherem kodesh kodeshim laHashem? Makes it sound like stam cheremim laHashem. The answer to that is that we have a different drasha with that, which is shechal al kodshei kodeshim val kodshei kalim. So that the cherem has the capacity to devolve upon something that's already kodesh. That is, whether it's kodshei kodeshim or kodeshim kalim. Machrim adam et kodeshav. A person has the capacity to be machrim his kodeshim, ben kodshei kodeshim, ben kodeshim kalim. Im neder, if it was a neder that he made to bring a korban, notein demayem, then he has to pay the full amount of the animal. Im nidava, if it's only nidava, notein et tovatan. Then he gives the extra value, and we'll see in a second what that extra value is. So now, what they're pointing out is that when a person takes a neder to bring a korban, he's taking personal responsibility to bring the korban. That means that even after he's been makdish, a particular animal, to fulfill his neder, to bring it up to the mikdash, something happens to that animal, he's still personally obligated and responsible to ensure that the korban reaches the mikdash. That personal responsibility makes it that the value of the korban is actually the full value of this animal to him. As long as this animal's around, that's mukdash, he has no longer has an obligation to do anything to fulfill his nether because he fulfilled it through this animal. This animal goes away, dies, is lost, stolen, then he hasn't fulfilled his obligation, and now he has to bring a new behema, a full new behema. That means the value of the korban to him is the entire value of the animal. And if he's machrim that value, then he's been machrim the entire value of the animal. That's what the Mishnah says over here. That's what it teaches you. Kol cherem kodshei kodashim, that you can make a cherem on kodesh, or kodshei kodashim, that goes l'Hashem. That is meaning that that even affects things that normally go to l'Hashem, that are on the Mizbeach, that also can be a cherem. And that's a reference to this idea that when you have a korban that you made a nether about, you own the entirety of that value if you're machrim it. If you only made a nidava, which means that if you now said, I'm going to bring this particular animal as a korban, if that animal is lost, stolen, dies, you have no responsibility or personal responsibility. You dedicated the particular animal, not personally obligating yourself. That means whatever happens to it is not your responsibility. So the value of the animal to you is not the whole animal, because even if the animal dies, you have no longer have any responsibility. So what is the value of the animal to you? That depends on what type of korban it is. If it's a korban that can be given to a kohen, then it might have real value to you, because then you can pick which kohen it goes to. On the other hand, if it's an olah, then there's nothing from the korban that goes to a kohen. So what's the value? So that's what's said here. Notena tovatam shor ze olah. He says this shor is going to be an olah. Omdim kama adam rotze litein b'shor ze la'oto olah. We figure out how much would a person be willing to pay to have this shor be his olah. Afal pi she'eino rashai. Even though he, the simple translation would be permitted to do this. All the Rishonim, Rashi, the Rabbeinu Gershon, Tosafot over here say, Afal pi she'eino rashai means Afal pi she'eino chayav, even though he's not obligated to bring such an olah. What would a person who does not have any obligation to bring an olah, what would he be willing to pay to have someone and give a nice gift to his adon, meaning to his master, to a Kodesh Baruch Hu? This person has an obligation to bring an olah, but there happens to be an olah that's floating around, and somebody says to him, how much would you pay in order to have give an extra bonus to Hashem, an extra bonus korban? Whatever that value is, that's the tovat hana'ah, because that is the value of this person getting the korban to the mikdash and putting on the mizbeach. Meaning that if the animal dies, yeah, he's not responsible, but he didn't get a korban on the mizbeach, he didn't bring a doron. So what is that value of that doron when you're not obligated to bring it? He's no longer obligated because he fulfilled his nether. Or really, it's his nedava here. He fulfilled it. So what would a person pay for that bonus to have an extra korban or bring something just as a gift to Hashem? That's the tovanat hana'ah we're speaking about here. And afal pi she'eino rashai is translated as, even though he's not chayav, not obligated to do such. Now, Tosafot brings as proof to that, based on the Gemara in Kedushim, which says, Ein balei umniyot, v'shayim lamod b'fnei tamidi chachamim, that people who are craftsmen or skilled laborers do not have permission to stand up before Talmidei Chachamim b'shasho skim b'machtan, when they're working. So it sounds like from there, you're not allowed to stand up when it comes to Talmidei Chachamim when you're doing your work. And Tosafot says that's just not true. Ein Rashaim over there means Ein An Chayavim. They're not obligated to stand up. If they want to stand up, they can. Just we don't obligate them to stand up because it's understandable why they're not standing up. It's not because of a lack of kavod to the Talmidei Chachamim. It's because they're osuk b'melachtan. They're involved in their crafts, and they need to focus on their crafts. They make them get up every time. They're never going to be able to do their work, never going to be able to focus. So given that, they ain reshaim there means ain chayavim, and that's his proof that the ain reshaim over here means ain an chayavim. Then the Rabbeinu Gershon brings a perush acher, and he says, this is the meaning over here. Omdim kama adam kohen shenu mishmar zeh. How much would a kohen who's not from this mishmar, current mishmar that's working, vutzelitain la mitna dave mishur zeh, to pay to this individual who's about to bring his shur as an olah, shiyamtim lo, that he'll wait and only bring it when his mishmar is working in the mikdash? How much would a kohen pay for this guy to postpone bringing his korban olah until he is in the mikdash to bring it? Now, that's not because he wants to bring the olah. That's because there's a benefit of bringing the olah, which is that the kohanim get the or they get the skins, the hides of the olot, they go to the kohanim. So how much would he pay for this guy to postpone his olah so it's brought during the time that he's working in the mikdash so he can be a beneficiary of the skin of the or? Now, the Rabbeinu Gershon doesn't say this, but I think according to this explanation, you could read Ana Rashai literally in the Mishnah, which is that kama adam rotzeli tain, how much does a kohen want to give for someone to bring a shor while his mishmar is working rather than the current mishmar? Afal pi she'ein rashai. Even though you're not allowed to do that. The reason you're not allowed to do that is because that's what's called kohen ha'mesayeh begranot. Kohenim are not allowed to pay for the benefits or matnot kuna that they're entitled to. And over here, that's exactly what he'd be doing. So even though it's not permissible, how much would a kohen pay if it was permissible to do such? And that would be the tovat hana that we're discussing over here. Now, a bechor, he's speaking about a bechor, ben tam, ben balmum, whether it's a tam, it's going to go on the mizbeach, or it's a balmum, it's going to go to the kohen, machrimim oto. You can't create the cherim on it. It's kochei kalim, ketzad putim oto. How do you redeem it? Omdim. Kama adam rotze litein bebechor zeh, litno, the ben bito, or the ben achoto. How much would someone pay a particular individual to give this to his grandson through his daughter, or to his sister's son, to his nephew, through his sister? Obviously, the situation here is where his daughter married a Kohen, his son-in-law is a Kohen, and therefore his grandchildren are Kohenim. He is not a Kohen, but his grandchildren are Kohenim. He's not a Kohen, but his sister married a Kohen. So his nephews are Kohenim, even though he is not a Kohen. So in that case, how much would he pay, which is permissible for him to do? How much would he pay to a guy, his neighbor, who says, look, I have a bechor, I have to give it to a kohen? He says, listen, I'll give you this and this, and you give it to my grandchildren. I'll give you this, give it to my nephews. He's allowed to do such, but what is that tovat hana? What is that ability to make the choice as to which kohen gets it? How much would someone pay to control that? How much would someone pay in order to garner that outcome? And that's what the tovat hana is over here. As both Rashi and Tosafot point out over here, the Mishnah is particular in picking a grandson through a daughter and a nephew through a sister, because that means that the party that's paying over here is not a kohen. If the party that was paying was a kohen, for instance, it was a kohen, and he's paying for it to go to his grandchildren when his son was a kohen, and these are his grandchildren through his son, it would not be permitted. And that's because, as we learned before, that kohen ha'maseya begranot applies even to a kohen who's purchasing the right on behalf of another kohen. Since this kohen himself could take from it, when he buys it even for another kohen, it's considered to be a problem of kohen ha'maseyeh begranot. We spent time on the sugya by kohen ha'maseyeh begranot as to what the problem is. Is it a problem of chilul Hashem? Is it a problem of the fact that these are matnot kuhuna that are owned by the kohenim? They can't be paying for them. Or if they pay for them, then it is a chilul Hashem because they are paying for something that they're entitled to, or they make it into something that is now a monetary transaction rather than a gift to the kohenim. Again, we spent more time there, but it's clear from the Mishnah is that they're trying to avoid the problem of kohenim ha'maseyeh begranot in order to determine the value over here, which is you're paying for it to be given. Yisrael is paying for it to be given to his grandchildren or his nephews who are kohanim. That's the value that you would have here. And maybe it's the same thing with other korbanot with regards to the Baalim's ability to bring it at different times. Maybe over there, the Yisrael can pay him to bring it at a different time to benefit the kohanim. Maybe that also could be classified as the tovat hana, akin to what the Rabbeinu Gershom said with regards to the olah and the hides of the olah. There he's speaking about a kohen paying, which maybe is eino rashai. Maybe that's why it says eino rashai. But if he's in Israel doing it, maybe that would be okay. Or maybe by korbanot like that, you don't have a choice because it's mishulchan gavoa kazachu, and therefore you don't have a right of tovat hana, as opposed to bechor and other items where you have to give it to the kohen. There you have that tovat hana, and therefore you can speak about a monetary value of that tovat hana, which will be what the cherem is about. The cherem sits on top of these kodoshim. Now the Mishnah, interestingly, only deals with one side of this, which is, what do the chachamim, who say stam charamim the kohenim, do with the pasuk of kol cherem kodesh kodeshim hu Hashem? What they don't address is, what about the other side of this? Which is, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, that stam charamim the bedek abayit, What does he do with all the psukim? Like the pasuk in Parshat Korach that we've read a number of times in Perek Yudchet, pasuk Yudalit, where it says, Kocherim b'Yisrael l'chayeh. What does he do with that pasuk? That sounds like it goes to the Kohanim. So the Shita Mekubetzet in Otet asks that question. Mekasha, Kradu Kocherim b'Yisrael l'chayeh, Dimash Mestam Charamin l'Kohanim, my Kovit. What does Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira do with it? B'chitema, if you want to say, Kepei Rish Rashi b'chumish, so he says, go take a look at Rashi and Chumash, and he dealt with that. You know what he says over there? He says, that's when you say Cherem LaKohanim. That Pasuk in Korach saying when you say Cherem LaKohanim. Says, that's a really nice answer. The only problem with that is that then the Pasuk in Vayikra Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Chet, that says, Kol Cherem Kodesh Kodeshim LaHashem. Why over there are you going to say that Cherem is a Stam Cherem? And the Cherem mentioned in Parshat Korach, which says, Kol Cherem Yisrael L'Chayeh. Why over there are you going to call it a Cherem that is LaKohanim? And over here you're going to call it a Stam Cheremim. How do you know which cherem is stam and which cherem is particularly to a party? He says, if you say that the cherem over there is cherem lekohanim, say the cherem over here is a cherem lashem. If you say that one's a stam cherem, then you have to say this one's a stam cherem. So he says, how does Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira get out of the problem? So he disagrees with Rashi's solution in the Chumash. He says, nearly the mistaver shratzon adam v'chefetz dato shiyu nechasav l'shamayim. He says that he thinks that Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira's position is logical, which is that when a person dedicates something as a cherem, his intent is for it to go to Hashem. It's L'Shem Shamayim. That's the stam reason a person is machrim, makdish items. It's because he wants to dedicate it to Hashem. People aren't dedicating things or giving them so they go to the Kohanim. That's Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira's view. Stam charamim la Hashem. Kol cherem is kodesh kodeshim la Hashem. The reason that the cherem there in Korach goes to the Kohanim is because you specified it as a Kohen. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense that it goes to the Kohanim because they natural tendency of an individual, or the intent of most people when they're machrim, is to give it L'Shem Shamayim, to give it to Hashem. Therefore, he learns it from that logic, and therefore that logic dictates how we view the psukim, or how we're going to interpret the cherem in the different psukim, as to which is a stam cherem, and which is a cherem like the one in Korach. We're going to say it's cherem l'kohanim, because otherwise we'd assume it goes L'Shem Shamayim. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Chavchet Amud Bet.